Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5 year long study of the New Testament. Today's program, lesson number 3 of week number 36, studying Mark chapter 8. As we get started, these reminders. For all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org to get started, or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call us at this toll-free number, 1-855-IGH-6988, to receive a free 30-lesson series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com to request that series. Did you miss any of last week's study of Mark chapter 7 or the previous week's study of Mark chapter 6? If you miss any of our IGH 260 programs, remember that every lesson in this series, going all the way back to week number 1, studying Matthew chapter 1, they are all always freely downloadable at internationalgospelhour.com/IGH260. Tune in to those past programs again today and every day. You will find more than 200 of our IGH programs archived there. Again, you can listen to and or download all of our one chapter per week study of the New Testament at internationalgospelhour.com/IGH260. And then finally, before we begin, join the thousands who keep up with International Gospel Hour and visit facebook.com/International Gospel Hour and twitter.com/Jody Apple. Let's return to our study of the 8th chapter of Mark's Gospel. So far in our study, we have completed our keyword study, our brief outline of the chapter, and our expanded outline of the chapter. In our last broadcast, we started our verse-by-verse, thought-by-thought study of Mark 8. Here's where we were at the end of that last program. Mark 8, verses 1 through 9. Jesus and the multitudes, the second compassionate feeding. As Mark chapter 7 ended and Mark chapter 8 opened, Jesus had left Tyre and Sidon. Jesus passed through Decapolis, and Jesus arrived somewhere along the shores of the Sea of Galilee. The multitudes were still following Jesus. They were hungry, and Jesus, out of compassion for them, would feed them. Before Jesus did so, he called and he spoke to his disciples. In the first feeding of the multitudes, recorded in Mark 6, Jesus challenged the disciples to feed them. "You give them something to eat." Mark 6:36. There was no way, of course, given the disciples' limited resources, that they could feed such a large crowd. Jesus' challenge to his disciples was a way to encourage them to take notice of and to appreciate what Jesus was about to do. The same thing occurred after the feeding in this chapter. Jesus called attention to the leaven, meaning the doctrine of the Pharisees and Herod. The disciples misunderstood Jesus. They thought that Jesus used the word leaven because they had not brought sufficient food with them. To get them to see what he really meant, Jesus asked the disciples a series of pointed questions, summed up as follows. "Did you see me feed the 5,000? Did you see me feed the 4,000? Do you remember how many baskets of remainders there were in each case? If you saw those miracles, then why would you think I was concerned about whether or not there was enough food on our trip?" And then finally, Jesus closed with this fairly accusatory question. "How is it you do not understand?" As we move further into this chapter, we will see how this all makes sense. The disciples saw Jesus feed 5,000, Mark 6. The disciples were about to see Jesus feed 4,000, Mark 8, this chapter. Both instances of Jesus feeding the multitudes should have had a major impact on Jesus' disciples. The calming of the storm in Mark 6 caught the attention of Jesus' disciples, but not the feeding of the 5,000 earlier in that chapter. Why? Mark 6, 51 and 52 tells us, because their heart was hardened. And now, in this context, after the feeding of the 4,000, Jesus took his disciples to task for thinking that a supposed shortage of food would have concerned Jesus. There was something that they still did not understand about Jesus' miraculous feedings. Mark chapter 6, verse 21. We will pay closer attention to that as we continue our study of the chapter. Verse 2, I have compassion on the multitude. They have been with me for 3 days and have nothing to eat. We noted in our last broadcast that the time the multitude spent with Jesus and the distance the multitudes traveled to hear and to be with Jesus were measures of their devotion to Jesus. Jesus was not unaware of that. Jesus' response, voiced in these words, I have compassion on the multitude. We have noted this several times throughout our studies, but it's always worth the repeat mention of the topic every time that the biblical text introduces it. Jesus cared for the multitudes. That has been shown repeatedly in many ways through our study of Matthew and again in our study of Mark so far. Jesus preached to them. Jesus healed their sick, and, as we see here, Jesus fed them. Unlike the political and the religious leaders of the day, who either despised the multitudes or who used them as pawns for their own nefarious purposes, Jesus consistently showed the highest level of interest in them as souls created in the image of God and as potential Jesus kingdom disciples. A quick review of just 3 texts that we have already read and studied confirms the extent of Jesus' compassion. Jesus showed compassion on the multitudes when he saw them as scattered sheep without a shepherd. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. We see a parallel to that in Mark chapter 6, verse 34 that we have already studied, and now again in this context, Mark chapter 8, verses 1 and following. In Matthew 14, verse 14, Jesus' compassion toward the crowds compelled him to heal the sick among them. In another one of the feeding of the multitude context, Matthew chapter 15, verse 32, Jesus' compassion led to their miraculous feeding. The word compassion itself merits a few more moments of our time and our study. First, the word compassion in our English translations appears as if it were an independent or a standalone term. That's not the case, however, in the original text. The words have compassion, or as it appears in other translations as feel compassion, have pity, feel sorry, my heart goes out to these people, and my heart is moved with pity are the translation of a single word in the original text. Second, that single word here reflects an ongoing reality. Jesus was them and, in a continual way, showing compassion to the multitudes. Third, the meaning of that term differs from our English word compassion, not in its root or in its basic meaning, but rather in how that meaning came across in the first century. Our English word compassion, a noun, means sympathetic pity and concern for the sufferings or misfortunes of another. New Oxford American Dictionary. The original term in the New Testament shares that sense, but with these twists. The term in the original appears as a verb and not as a noun. It inherently meant to show compassion or to have compassion. We see that reflected in the various translations just noted. It was, in this context, something actively ongoing and not just a static descriptive feeling or emotion. This particular form of the word appears 12 times in the New Testament. As the English translation cited a moment ago indicated, the terms used in the New Testament also reflects sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering or misfortunes of others. It was often used in the context of Jesus' concern for the multitudes. We see that in Matthew 9:36, 14:14, 15:32, and in Mark chapter 6, verse 34, and this chapter 8, verse 2. It appears at least three times in the gospel narratives to indicate a character that paralleled deity in context. In the Matthew 18 parable, when the king, an obvious God figure in that context, forgave the indebted 10,000 talent servant, Matthew 18:27, we see it reflected in the character and the concern of the man we call the Good Samaritan, another God-like, Christ-like, Spirit-like figure, Luke 10:33. And we see it reflected in the term describing the father of the man we call the prodigal son, Luke 15:20. That father figure was another God, Christ, and Spirit-like figure in that context. We find the term used in several accounts of Jesus' healing. When Jesus restored the sight of two blind men, Matthew 20:34. When Jesus healed the leper, Mark 1:41. When Jesus was about to heal the young man who was thrown into the water or into the fire, Mark 9:22, and as Jesus was about to raise the widow of Nain's son, Luke 7:13. We will not take the time to look at other related forms of the term in the Second Covenant. We looked briefly at 12 instances here, but there are at least 26 total instances appearing in four different forms in this word family throughout the New Testament. Finally, what does this word mean? As already noted when we looked at the meaning of the English word compassion, this word in the original means, according to Bauer, have pity, feel sympathy. It was usually used with regard to feeling this way with or for someone. Lou and Nida note, to experience great affection and compassion for someone, to feel compassion for, to have great affection for, love, compassion. The term etymologically, meaning as it developed over time from its root or original meaning or meanings, shares a cognate, a related connection with our word spleen. That cognate or related term was often associated with our internal organs in addition to the spleen. Thus, kidneys, bowels, and other abdominal or internal organs were seen to be connected, but not just physically, but especially so from the standpoint of their use throughout the New Testament in an emotional sense. What's the reasoning behind that? In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Mark chapter 8. These reminders as we conclude. To start our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.